This is Delicious Matt Bear, and you are listening to Footstuff.
Some techno sounds.
Something like that.
So my mom wakes me up at 4 a.m. approximately. This is like when it was sometime when I was in high school, like 9th, 10th grade or something. And she just says, grab your camera and come out in the hall. And I just said, okay, all right, like, you know, early in the morning, I didn't know what else to do. Grab my camera, come out in the hall. First thing I see is my cat, and he's looking up and just meowing, like, real loud, like, louder and more frequent than I've ever heard him meow before.
Like
and
an actual meow.
Like, actual meowing. Not now, because he's too fat to meow, so he just goes, nah. But, like, he's actually,
yeah,
like,
he's
cat
like the,
meowing.
He's the cat version of Jabba the Hutt.
He's the cat version of... what's his name? The fat bastard in the Austin Powers movies.
We're not talking. Yeah. No, we had Wade.
So let me get back to my
I
story.
Hit my quota
please,
of Austin
you.
Powers conversations with you yesterday, two days ago, whenever that was.
So I look up to what my cat is looking at, and on a picture frame in our upstairs hallway is an owl just sitting there, looking scared out of his fucking mind. So what must have happened, the only thing that could have happened, because there are two cat doors between the outside world where owls live and the inside world where the owl was. My cat, who is known for fighting foxes and killing rabbits and everything and anything around my house, grabbed an owl and brought it inside and is now trying to murder it inside.
Did you let him continue his
no,
quest?
No. We took,
oh, you should have eaten the owl.
We took a Wawa crate and pinned the yes. owl next to the painting it was on.
Why did
and
you
then
guys
took
have
it outside.
A Wawa crate?
I have three
how much,
Wawa crates
how much Wawa
at my
what house.
Is
you
a Wawa
buy it
crate?
It's like a milk crate, but it's
how
from Wawa.
How many hoagies do you have to buy before they give you a fucking crate?
I stole them, okay?
It's a straight-up case of whodunit. Footstuff Podcast
asked and answered.
It.
I stole the Wawa crates.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to Footstuff Podcast. My name is Tyler Technicolor Dreamcoat SoCash.
Whoa!
Man.
He's still thinking about that fucking sweater. The sweater that could have been.
I'm wearing a great new flannel from a thrift shop in Burlington. I just feel very colorful, even though it's mostly a black flannel.
No, it's nice. There's some
red. Yeah, there's some
it's
color.
Black.
It's red and green. It's technically a Christmas flannel.
There's green and red and white. And
what did I say?
There's no white in there.
Some white in there. It's gray or tan.
How many rods and cones are in your fucking eyes? Not enough. That's how many.
Well, blind as an owl, Matt Bear is to my immediate studio left. Matt Bear.
Woo-hoo.
Across from me is the inimitable. I can never say that word. Inimitable.
I don't think that's right.
That's right. I looked it up. Wait, can
I looked it up today.
Across from me.
Can I be
the
inimitable?
Jeremy Utz.
And unfortunately, right next to me is the one, the only Wade Bastion.
Hey ho, hey ho.
And in studio tonight, we are graced by the presence of Amanda Colley.
Hello.
Hell yes, friend of the pod, Amanda Colley, yes. Who must have had her name submitted, Wade Bastion.
Because she won the Footstuff Podcast Deluxe Experience.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yes, she did.
And she did, in fact, stay at your house. That's amazing.
Did you guys make gumbo this time?
Did not make gumbo or spill it anywhere.
Didn't,
no.
It didn't go well last time. Did you spill it a second time?
Once
gumbo
again,
spiller.
If you would like to have the Footstuff Podcast Deluxe Experience, all you have to do is have your name submitted by a friend who doesn't like you very much to an email address, Nubbins.
That'd be footstuffpodcast@gmail.com.
Oh, yeah.
Every week we pick out one of those emails, and if your name was listed by a friend or family member, we email you. We ask you to come to Lake Placid, New York.
Yep.
Which is near Studio 7. We have you stay at Wade Bastion's house in the hole, and you get to go on a hike with him, and then you come to a viewing of Footstuff Podcast live in Studio 7, which is just outside of New York State's largest wilderness area, Jeremy Utz.
It doesn't hurt to brush up on your gumbo cooking either.
No, no. We cover stories of adventure, antics, and activism around the country every week. We talk about hiker news from around the country. We're going to do a deep dive this week. Focusing on trip planning and disasters that ensue if you fail to do so. Mm-hmm. And every week, we talk about a little bit of foot stuff. And Jeremy, you went on an adventure of a lifetime.
I wasn't ready.
You're never ready.
I actually wasn't even paying attention. I was staring at Wade's pants because he put the hammer loop back in his pocket because he's ashamed of it. He's ashamed of it.
Hammer to put in the loop.
We can give you one.
Do you have a hammer?
Yeah.
Okay. Jeremy, you have some foot stuff. And you were involved with another member of Footstuff Podcast in one of these stories.
Involved?
Ooh. No, seriously, because you were apparently touching one of us.
There was a little man-on-man contact this
week.
Hell
yes!
Yeah, did anyone not see that new background on the computer? I mean,
yeah, who made that? Who made that one?
Which one? The cowboy one? Yeah.
Or the one of him halved by a shark?
I actually witnessed you making that, and it was... fantastic. But mostly just because I walked in at 7 in the morning and you were looking at pictures of dead bodies.
If you follow Footstuff Podcast on Twitter or on Instagram at Footstuff Podcast or on Twitter at Footstuff Pod, we will put up the picture of Wade being consumed by
a shark.
Yeah, we need to put that. Yeah, we need to put that. And the broke back one. That one needs to go up,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Jeremy, what did you do?
So we actually pushed back the recording of the show for a trip that Wade and I had planned.
Yes, indeed.
Well, I still recorded on Monday.
Really?
Yeah. But continue.
Did you talk or was it just random apartment noises?
Both.
Huh.
It's him clapping with his feet for an hour and a half in front of a microphone.
I love it when he does that. His feet are so small, it just makes a nice sound. So anyways, Wade and I set out to do Gray, Skylight, and Marcy.
Tell the listenership where exactly those peaks are, Jeremy.
New York.
Yep, hell yeah.
Well,
thank you, Jeremy.
Well, so the original plan was Gray. That was just it. Gray is the seventh highest of the high peaks in the high peaks region of the Adirondacks. Mm-hmm. And it is trailless.
Severely underrated.
Severely underrated, absolutely. But then we had planned, after talking about going up Gray, we also wanted to go to Gray, which is sort of on the backside of Mount Marcy, which is the tallest mountain in the state. So we wanted to go around Marcy up to Gray and then have the possibility to go up and over Marcy to come back to the Adirondack Lodge, which was the trailhead we were starting at. And then we threw in another possibility of going up Skylight, which is the fourth tallest of all.
I hear
the
a
peaks.
Lot of possibilities. Did you actually climb these or no?
Skylight was a very slim possibility for me. Mm. Wade was dead set on doing it.
Absolutely.
I planned
awesome.
On just bivvying at Four Corners and napping while he did it. We set out to do Gray because last summer I attempted to do those three and only ended up doing Marcy and Skylight. So I kind of had orphaned Gray. So, we set out, we got up at 3 in the morning.
3 in the morning, yep.
And we finally got to the trailhead at, like, right at 4.
Right at 4.
So we set out about 4. It was actually really cold. The weather forecast said it was supposed to be warm. And
like, high in the mid-40s, I think.
And it just never happened for us. All of the low...
Oh, I think I know a song about it. It's 4 a.m., I must be cold, Isn't that it?
You're a bad person.
Yes.
Although, I do want to note, it was cold in the morning, but on the way...
Jeremy's like 3 doors down from the fucking trailhead.
That's a Matchbox 20
song. You asshole! Yeah. It's Matchbox 20! Rob Thomas is a fucking saint.
On the way out to Marcy Dam, Jeremy, I don't know if you remember this, we kept getting hit with waves of warm air.
Very warm.
Like at least 10 degrees warmer than whatever air we were walking through. Because he and I both independently had the thought of, it just got a lot warmer. And like it was so weird hitting these like waves of warm air as we were hiking out.
You were hiking through the thermals.
Yeah. But then we got to Marcy Dam, clear night. The moon had just set so we could see all the stars. We could see the Milky Way. It was gorgeous out
there.
Yeah,
we shut off the headlights and just kind of stood there for a while and enjoying the stars.
Welcome
and then,
to wildness.
Yeah, we pushed on. We were planning on stopping at Lake Arnold to have a little snack.
At sunrise.
Yeah, at sunrise. We got there well before sunrise. Yeah. It was very windy and very cold. So we stopped for, I think we stopped moving for what,
5 minutes?
90 seconds?
Yeah, not long at Lake Arnold. But then continued on through the treacherous bogs.
Yes.
Through
Are they
the
frozen?
Pass.
Oh, yeah.
At the headwaters of the Opalescent River, they're
yeah.
frozen.
It's quite
for
nice.
Now.
Yeah.
Going to Feldspar, not only was it frozen and super easy to get around, but gorgeous views of Colden. Oh, man, the views of the slides
oh,
back
when
there.
You're by that brook. Oh. Looking up at it on the right.
And we could actually
oh,
see
so
Gray from the trail as well. It was kind of cool, and also I feel like it's kind of rare in the Adirondacks to be on the trail and be able to see the peak that you're, you know, attempting for the day just because of the thick forest cover. So that was also rad. We broke for a minute and at the lean-to and shivered our way through some snacks.
Yep.
And then proceeded.
What did you eat?
I actually had a
frozen roast beef sandwich.
It wasn't frozen.
Nice.
It was a wrap. It was bacon, lettuce, tomato, onion, creamy Parmesan dressing, red peppers, green peppers.
Wow.
It was nice.
Tinfoil?
I didn't eat the tinfoil this time.
But it was.
You know, last time it gave me a spot of indigestion.
Understandable.
So and he also has a cavity now, and that's not good with cavities.
My first cavity. I have one.
Wow.
Yeah, I never had one before. I had to ask my girlfriend what it was.
I ate a corn bagel with cream cheese.
And that is
a
not
what?
That's not a bagel that's filled with corn and cream cheese, because that's what I thought it was. I said, why would you want corn on a bagel?
They're the best kinds of bagels you could get. They're nice and sweet and yellow and delicious.
I don't believe
this
you.
For a very long time now. Keeps bringing up the corn bagels.
They're good corn bagels.
Yeah,
I love corn bagels.
Please describe a corn bagel.
A corn bagel is a bagel. You know a bagel?
Yes.
So it's a bagel, and it's made with corn, so it's sweet and delicious and yellow. You ever have corn ice cream? It's like the same thing, but
what?
A bagel.
Yeah, corn cream.
Corn ice cream.
Corn ice cream. Yeah, they sell it at the
obviously
ice cream store
Donnelly's.
In Kennett Square. No, not at Donnelly's. Oh, dear God, no. They would never do corn ice cream
They
there.
Only have one flavor.
Yeah, and it's lasagna flavor.
And it's delicious.
And it's delicious, yeah.
Shout out Donnelly's.
Amanda, you're here in Studio 7 today. Have you ever been up Gray, Skylight, or Marcy?
I have been up Marcy.
What's
yes.
it like?
It is awesome. I had an adventure getting up there. I was going to do Gray, Skylight, and Marcy, but then I was very hungover and
yes, yes,
decided not to. Took yep. a summit nap on Marcy.
Ooh,
and that was
ripped your jacket,
delicious
right?
summer nap.
Hell yes. Well, yeah. If you're traveling to these peaks, they are remote. They're out there. That's why Jeremy and Wade started at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
So what happened when you got up to Lake Tier of the Clouds?
Well, before we got to Lake Tier. I guess we kind of got to Lake Tier and cut off and did Gray.
Okay.
Not even a mile up to Gray from that herd pass.
It was quick.
Yeah, it's like
it was,
three quarters of a mile.
It was pretty quick.
Quick ascent.
The summit of Gray I'd only been on once before in the summer, and it was all trees. You could barely see Marcy. But when we got up there, whoa. You know, there's at least 6-7 feet of snow up there. So we were above all the trees. Very clear views all around.
360
even
degree
in the
views.
Even in the summer, if you stand on that big rock, you get... Yeah. An amazing
Gray
has view.
We couldn't even really see any rock. I didn't see a rock.
No, not at all.
It was all snow.
And so we got up there to celebrate getting to the summit by 9 in the morning. We drank some cinnamon whiskey, and it was great.
I had a nip of the whiskey, which is something I don't normally do.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
It was very tasty. Awesome, awesome views. I almost lost my camera lens, I think.
I broke the GoPro.
You broke the GoPro at that point.
Yep.
So many camera lenses caps get turned in.
Yeah, it's so sad.
It's crazy.
Yeah, after that, we descended down to the lake where Wade and I were inspired by a picture that's hanging up in the Adirondack Lodge of a man walking across Lake Tier in the winter with Marcy in the background.
Is this when you two started voraciously hugging each other?
No. We weren't happy at this point. We weren't really that happy yet. So we tried to recreate that picture. I had never been to Lake Tier, so I was like really excited to kind of walk out onto it, and the views of Marcy there are really cool. From there, we headed to Four Corners, where probably the only point in the day I was like really, really warm. Not
very
from, like,
comfortable.
Being sweaty. Like it was just the yeah. sun was out. We were laying in the sun and eating snacks.
More yeah. like Lake Tear of the Clouds at that point.
Yeah, so we're laying there eating snacks. And Wade kind of talked me into going up Skylight, which
yeah,
we did.
Because it's only a half a mile from there to Skylight, which is the fourth tallest of the high peaks. Gorgeous, gorgeous views. One of the only summit in the entire Adirondacks that has alpine azalea on it.
We're going to do a specialty episode with Summit Seward.
Kayla White.
Kayla White.
Yes.
We're going to talk about that ecosystem.
Skylight was awesome. The sun was out when we were on Skylight. It was windy. It was cold, but it was manageable. The views from Skylight is...
Could you see that weird swamp thing like off in the distance?
Oh, the boreal ponds?
Yeah. I pointed it out to Wade, and he was just like, he didn't want any part of it.
No, because you pointed it out to me. You said, isn't that... Boreas Ponds? And I said, no, that's Elk Lake.
I said, oh yeah, it's that little shit that's way back there. Elk Lake, though, man, we should try to save that one next. So we hung out on Skylight for a while.
I have the best picture of Jeremy ever on the top of Skylight.
He actually
That'll
does.
Be posted soon.
It was pretty awesome. I had to stand in really cold wind to get it. But
come up with a nickname for Jeremy Utz when you see this picture when it's finally
posted. Good.
Just standing there like on Skylight looking at Marcy, it's so daunting knowing that you have to go all the way down and then you have to go all the way up. And at that point, we actually noticed that backside of Marcy, the snowpack from the middle was gone, mm-hmm. whether it be from the sun or from the wind. So it was snow and then it broke to open bare rock for what, like 200, 300 feet?
Yeah, at least.
And then it was snowpack again, and we were both talking about it, and we decided that we were going to complain about it after we did it.
Yeah.
And we weren't going to talk about how shitty that was going to be. We were just going to complain later. So we descended, and then we kind of like rearranged our packs, got our gear together for going up Marcy, because we knew that the wind was going to be pretty intense, and it was.
Yeah, it was gusting. By the end of the day, it was gusting up to 40 easily, like sustained 25, 30, I'd say. Like, it was very, very fast winds.
Wait, you literally stood up on Mount Marcy with an anemometer.
For
hours,
yeah.
You've measured the wind, so you know when it's 30 miles an hour.
And so we get to the part, like, at Schofield Cobble where the snow ended. We had to take our snowshoes off, and the snowshoes were literally acting like sails, like in our one hand, just blowing us around.
You're pretty much
and then trying to walk up.
Like a manemometer at this point.
Man. Yeah.
And
that's a good one. That's
the distance of the rock was so short, it was pointless to try to put them on our packs. And, I mean, the wind was cold enough that it was, like, freezing my hood and my face mask as I was walking. So we're then walking up the steep part of Marcy, carrying the poles and just carrying the snowshoes.
Stumbling the way up.
Getting tossed by the wind.
God. It was awful.
Yeah, it was.
But we did make it to the summit. Jeremy almost got taken out by an avalanche on the way up.
What? I was literally like 20 feet below the summit, and I took a step into the snow, and it broke, and I slid back, like sliding towards like the Panther Gorge side of Marcy.
Yes. Oh.
About 10 feet. And I was like,
wow.
Oh, shit. Wade was already on the summit. He didn't even know that I was like shitting my pants.
But then, we were on the summit. Someone took an American flag and stuffed it into one of the cairns up there.
Oh, you
so it was like
there.
Fluttering in the breeze. But this was
asshole.
Months after that happened. So it was just tatters. Mm. So I took all that out. It was frozen to it. So I took all that out.
He didn't just take it off the cairn, though. Because of the wind and how cold it was, he was desperately struggling to get it out.
It was awful.
Yeah, we hung out for a while. Took some pictures.
Yeah.
Not very long.
And then hike down, and it's very easy to get lost on Marcy because I've hiked that mountain so many times, but with 6 feet of snow, you can't see where the trail normally is.
And there was no trail broken out.
So,
like, no distinct broken trail. The snow was, like, really, really icy, so even our snowshoes didn't really make, like, very visible tracks.
Yeah, it was so...
It took us a while.
Your story
is very riveting, but can you kind of glaze over the hugging episode where you hugged a lot?
Oh, that's right.
Could you rewind
that did just
to the
happen.
Part where you were hugging a lot?
Yeah, so when we got to the top of Marcy and we were both standing on the summit, we hugged.
I had, before we hugged, we both had to change our pants because of whatever, so we were there pantsless and we hugged. That's what those other guys saw, was pantsless men hugging.
Yeah. Yep.
Sounds like amazing foot stuff, you guys.
The plot thickens.
Something thickens.
Quickly, Matt Bear, you had foot stuff, but it was kind of with your hands.
Yes, foot and hand stuff.
Hell yes.
I got to
crab walking. He was crab walking. He's crab walking from Boreas Ponds.
I crab walked my way all the way over to Willsboro to the Crux.
Shout out!
Climbing center, where I got to compete in a climbing competition, my first in several years, which was so much fun. There was probably, what, like 20, 30 people there?
Yeah,
Jeremy,
I'd say.
Something
yeah.
like that. There were like four different categories and 16, 17 different routes I think they had set up. They had completely stripped all the holds from like the entire gym and then redone them. And some of them were good.
Some of them were
some of them were fun. Some
I liked the one that went over the overhang. It like was overhung and then onto the slab.
I liked the one that was dislocated my shoulder.
Dear God.
Oh yeah, that one looked cool. It was a what, 10B? 10B 510B?
B or C.
B or C.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was rad.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Tell people how you did, Matt Bear.
Oh, he was Mr. Clean.
Yeah.
He was Mr. Clean.
Yeah, I only fell on one of them.
Yeah.
Or I guess two, since I tried that one at the very end. But I didn't win because they only announced the first place in each category, but given by who is competing and the point totals, I'm pretty sure I got third. But
awesome. Undetermined. Hell yes.
Not only did he get third, though, but he was in the hardest bracket of climbers.
Yeah, the competitive.
If he would have entered a lower bracket,
you
would have crushed him.
The Legion of Experts.
And I want a cool beanie.
That's true, with a tassel on it.
Yes.
I saw that beanie.
The K spilled poutine on this evening.
Friend of the pod, K.
How did someone spill poutine on your head?
Well,
he is very short. He is very short. Very short. At least you didn't get in on those Crocs that Tyler was commenting on earlier.
The tiny boy Crocs.
Although, they're edible. They are edible.
The Crocs are plastic, Crocs. Matt Berry.
No, you can eat them.
No, you can't eat them.
You can't eat them.
Yeah.
You got to boil it like leather.
Yeah, no, but they are edible.
No, like jeans.
Boiled
jeans.
Boiled denim.
Denim chicken.
Well, I had a little bit of foot stuff that didn't involve denim chicken.
Prove it.
It involved going to Metro Rock with Jeremy and Matt Bear.
Oh, yeah, we did
went
that.
Did we do that? Last week in Burlington. We then went to the thrift store to get a bunch of cool pins and hats and thrift shop tees. And I actually was over there to hang out with Friend of the Pod Marnell and to also go to Montpelier to watch a Northeast Wilderness Trust event video called Born to Rewild with John Davis, who's a wildlife conservationist. He walked 5,000 miles from central Mexico, north central Mexico through a jaguar reserve, all the way to the U.S.-Mexico border wall, and then hopped on the Continental Divide Trail after some time in Arizona and wound his way up through Wyoming, into Montana, up into Canada. He walked 5,000 miles.
And how many miles did you walk from Boreas Ponds?
47.
That's still pretty cool.
No, John Davis walked 5,000 miles. It was a great video called Born to Rewild, just calling for us to consider a future where we allow wildlife corridors to restore. It was a fantastic video sponsored by the Northeast Wilderness Trust.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would like to know. I would like to know what
the get him on the pod.
Yeah,
Studio
I want to know
7.
What the difficulty grade of climbing the U.S.-Mexico border wall is. I'd say it's a 5-6.
I want to know more about the jaguars.
Wait,
do jaguars live in Mexico? Or is that some kind of cool slang?
And one of them called
cartel.
El Jefe. El Jefe, one of the jaguars.
Slang. That's definitely slang.
Has traveled into the United States.
El Jefe.
So they're smuggling drugs into this country using jaguars?
Spanish for the Jefe.
You know, if a jaguar licks your head, it's good luck.
Really?
Yeah.
I love British traditions.
But if a jaguar bites your head, the worst of luck.
Yes. Yeah, it's a fine line.
I did two other things I got to cover real fast. One, climbed Mount Colden, which is in the middle of the High Peaks Wilderness area. Mount Colden, beautiful, has alpine vegetation on it. It was such a clear day, I could see Macaulay Mountain in Old Forge, New York. You could see Skyride and Challenger, two of the runs on Macaulay Mountain, with the naked eye from Mount Colden. That's far. It's like 60 miles as the crow flies. I thought that was pretty cool.
It's awesome. It's been really clear.
It's been clear
we
lately.
We could see fucking Camel's Hump in Mansfield.
Yes, you
easily.
Can.
very easily.
Shout out Green Mountain
State.
Yeah,
when we were driving to the Crux.
Epic
view.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Finally, one last bit of foot stuff. It's more like ski stuff.
Well, I guess that's done with your feet.
Yeah. I was able, for the first time in my life, to ski the Whiteface slides.
They were open.
I didn't end up in Sacramento. I ended up at the bottom of Whiteface Mountain like a normal person.
You failed.
But the slides on Whiteface, skiing them, scary. So cool. Very icy. Just enough snow to have a lot of fun if you're safe. Matt
I
Bear.
Do have one question for you, though. Yes. Did you get a new haircut?
No.
Have you bought an iPhone?
No. No haircut, no iPhone, didn't end up in Sacramento.
You're not doing it right. But he has had a concussion. I saw where
that was
it
a
happened.
While ago. Yeah.
Wade said, "This is where Tyler got his concussion." And I said, "Yeah." Sure, I can see it.
I did. I went on a long hike with Wade, and at the end of the hike, I actually thought I was hiking with a friend of the pod, Drew.
They don't look the same.
I was out of it. We have a studio guest in Studio 7. Amanda Colley, would you like to talk about any foot stuff you've been up to in the past week?
Sure. Yeah. So I work as a guide out in like Maine and New Hampshire.
Hell yes.
Yes.
And I went on a little bit of an adventure. Yeah. So we actually went out and hiked Austin Brook Trail up to Gentian Pond Shelter, which is on the AP.
Oh, hell yeah.
Really cool shelter. It's like a double decker.
I love those.
Lean
to so
thing.
And does it remind you of those buses in your homeland there?
Yep.
Anyway, so when you wake up in the morning, you get this beautiful view of the 4,000... Gentians, yes. That's what I was going to say. Well, when we got up to the shelter, we were looking around for the bear box and couldn't find it anywhere and then realized we were standing on
it. What the hell's a bear box?
Oh, it's this... Yeah.
It's like it's a big metal box with a latch.
There's a bear inside of it?
And the bear comes out and you gotta kill it and you get bear steaks. No, it's to put food in and then you close it and there's a special latch that bears apparently haven't learned how to get into.
Why don't we have those?
Some shelters on the AT have like the bear boxes or they have the cables or something.
But wouldn't
like that
help with the protection of bears in the Adirondack High Peaks?
This is a whole other issue we can get
into. Oh, they're doing that down the hall tonight?
They're doing that down the hall after
the
Plinko. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, after Plinko.
Yeah, well.
Sorry.
Well, it was completely buried in snow, so we had to dig it out. But
buried bear box.
Buried bear box.
Wow. Mm.
Yeah, it's a really cool shelter. I would highly recommend checking it out. You go down to get water into this like area that's basically just a huge wind tunnel, but you get to like see some really cool like views of the 4,000 footers and the whites there.
That's cool.
So,
nice.
Yes. Yeah. That's awesome. Sweet. Then Wrench Kid was there? Or no? Yeah.
What about Stoop
Kid? Wrench Kid.
Shout out Wrench Kid.
We know you're listening.
What the hell's a Wrench Kid?
Well, we're going to cut to a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about hiker news from around the country.
Wait, I had more questions about the bear box.
Something like that. Welcome back to Footstep Podcast, everybody. We have a bunch of delicious news items from around the country. The first sounds kind of tasty, Wade.
It is. You guys like snow cones?
Not
really. I got a snow cone that'll fucking blow your head off. So.
Would you just put like firecrackers in it? Or like, what is that exactly?
Gunpowder in the
snow cone? Is there a gun in the snow cone?
On March 23rd in Eastern Europe, orange snow fell all across the land. People in and around the Russian city of Sochi.
I was just going to say, that's like Russia, right? Because this shit only happens in Russia.
Sochi, the Winter Olympics site.
Yes, where they had the Winter Olympics that went off without a hitch and no one got hurt or injured or anything bad happened there. Now, orange snow is falling all across the area. The snow was caused by sand that was dusted up, that came up, was kicked up by storms in northern Africa. And a similar effect has happened in...
Hold on, Wade. We have a special visitor who has come out of his laboratory back from sabbatical. Dr. Science is coming back into his seat at Studio 7. Dr. Science, where the hell have you been?
I've been really busy the last couple weeks. Me and Dr. Crow have been in the lab working on a new truth, a youth serum, serum of eternal life. Yeah,
excellent. How's
a Ponce de Leon Fountain of Youth kind of situation here?
Yes, but you could buy it at the drugstore. But if anybody knows like a good source of healthy baboons, please call us because we're running through these suckers like crazy. Anybody, we're just reaching out.
Wait, what were you talking about?
And I also finished up my short film.
Yes.
Which I uploaded to YouTube today.
How can they find this, Dr. Science? How can the Footstuff Nation find your new video?
Well, I was hoping that you would put a link in the bio of the Footstuff.
We could put
podcast.
A link. We could post it to all the Footstuff media.
Yeah.
Hell yes.
Thanks, guys.
We will do that. Dr. Science, welcome back.
Thank you.
Wade Bastian, you were talking about, like, I don't know, some kind of ice cream or something.
Some orange snow cones. Yes. So the orange snow is falling all across Eastern Europe. It is apparently foul-smelling and oily to the touch.
Like most of Russia.
So the orange came from a dust storm that came from northern Africa. It floated over Greece and towards Russia and then mixed with the snow and came down. And in Russia, Bulgaria, and the Ukraine, people are saying that they're skiing on Mars, all at different skiing areas. And actually, they point out Georgia as well, which, if anyone has been following skiing news in the country of Georgia,
things
are fucked over there.
Don't get on a chairlift in Georgia.
Oh, that's where that happened?
Yeah, that's where that happened.
Man.
It was in Georgia.
That video is so fucked.
Yeah, I hate
the South.
It went backwards for many minutes,
man.
And everyone was jettisoned or willingly dropped out of the chairlift to avoid carnage.
No, one person did not avoid it.
No.
Actually, there were a few. Yeah. And one was just face down on the snow for a while.
Yeah, I think shit minced was appropriate.
Yes, shit minced.
Yeah,
but
so
anyway,
that's my story. Orange snow, pretty weird phenomenon
cool.
that's going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I heard that came from a Russian spy, and that person's known as Agent Orange. Well, Nubbins,
hey, that's a good band.
You have some Footstuff news?
Yes, I do. So last week, ice climber Stas Beskin made some chilling first ascents in Quebec.
Quebec, I think is how
Quebec.
You say that. It's
yes, Quebec.
Quebec.
He soloed three super thin pillars in a row, one right after the other, and these were located on some sea cliffs, and the ice had already thinned, so he had to use a new technique that he says he will reveal soon, but cannot go further into
what?
At this moment.
What are you talking about?
That's what he said what? In his article.
Just going up is a... technique.
Well,
can't
so
talk
like
out.
So like the these pillars are so thin you could literally like wrap your arms around them.
And it's just ice?
Just ice.
Fuck that.
Yeah, so there is no way to protect these climbs, and they receive sun all day, which makes them very dangerous, especially in the later hours of the day. And when the tide is high, they come out of the sea directly. And he said these were very, very thin climbs that he could feel shaking when he started climbing.
Ooh.
Like he could feel the whole pillar just moving as he started up. And he did all of them solo.
Wow.
That's amazing.
And they look to be about 40 to 60 feet tall, depending on the pillar.
Oh, God.
Yeah. He said he had been waiting all winter for climbs like these. So there we go.
Oh, God. I want to know what his technique was.
Yeah,
I'm
too.
Very
yeah,
interested. God, yeah. That's awful. I would never do that in a million years.
Ugh. Crazy.
Yeah.
Jeremy Utz.
Yeah, so my news is also recent. This story was posted on the March 27th. I got this from Climbing Magazine. Andrew Hamilton became the first to summit all of Colorado's 14ers in a single winter.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Damn.
If that name sounds familiar to you, it is because he holds the current speed record for the all of the 14ers, which is 9 days, 21 hours, and 51 minutes. But yeah, so the story is actually quite long, and he kind of goes into detail about each like range. And a lot of these, there was a low snowfall year in Colorado, but a lot of them were under like very dangerous avalanche conditions for most of the winter. So a lot of the local rangers and people were telling him, like, if you try this, like, you will die. And apparently, right after he started, he was hiking in boots that were too heavy, is what he says, and his feet were, like, swollen. So for 2 weeks, he was not hiking at all. So he did some, crazy link-ups of trying to, like, traverse all of these peaks.
Yeah.
One of them is a 100-mile link-up that does 14 peaks. He did all this
Holy
by himself.
Shit.
Yeah.
God, that's a century hike.
Yeah, he encountered like 50, 60 mile per hour winds, crazy snowfalls. I mean, like anyone that hikes in the winter, you know that how this stuff happens.
One of them in Colorado is called Capitol, and you have around a 1 mile butt slide where you have 1 foot on one side of the escarpment, 1 foot on the other side. It's a big arete, really. And you have to butt slide over this gigantic arete.
You mean glad-assing.
Yes, glad-assing. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Science.
Welcome back, doctor.
Oh, man.
Jeremy?
Yes.
Actually, he said that he actually talked about Capitol in this, and he said that Capitol is, in the winter, is the hardest of all of them. Mm. He was saving it until he could find like the most opportune weather window to do like that range in general, which I believe is called the Elks.
Elk range, yep, exactly. It's near Aspen.
But he ended up finishing, and yeah, he came down to the parking lot from his last one, which he also said was the easiest one, which is Quandary. They had some champagne in the parking lot, and he said that his next big goal is to try to do something called the Centennials. It's the 100 highest peaks in 20 days in Colorado is what he wants to try.
Ambitious. Andrew Hamilton, great job.
Yeah.
What a feat.
Yeah, he ends it with a kind of a cool quote that says, "There's so much out there, it only ends when your body does."
Yeah, we should probably send him a sticker.
Yeah,
great job. Someone get the interns on his address.
Who are the interns?
Interns!
I think that, yeah, they got it.
So I've got a little bit of hiker news. We're going down to the borderlands between U.S. and Mexico.
Alabama. Beautiful.
Close.
The Close. Alligator state. I love it.
Close.
You get the best beef jerky from that state.
I thought it was the dismal swamp state.
That's Virginia.
Yeah.
It is Virginia. So since 1994, the U.S. government has been erecting fences and hundreds of miles of roads along the 2,000-mile border between the United States and Mexico. Along this border, there are 25 million acres of protected public lands, and the Adirondack Park, for comparison, is 6.1 million acres. So we're talking about four times as much as the Adirondack Park. There are 25 million acres of protected public lands, including six wildlife refuges, six national parks, tribal lands, wilderness areas, conservation areas.
Tribal lands.
Tribal lands.
Tribal
lands. I love tribal lands.
Biologists have estimated that there are about 134 mammals, 178 reptiles, 57 species of amphibians that live within 30 miles of this sensitive border area between the United States and Mexico. It's a incredibly sensitive wildlife corridors across the North American continent. 50 of these species, including spotted owls, jaguars, barred tiger salamanders, are globally or protected as globally or threatened species. And President Trump wants to build his border wall. And this is coming at a time of political tension. The border wall, though, scientists are saying, would reduce gene flow, cause inbreeding in certain species, including the Mexican gray wolf, which is the most endangered wolf in the entire world. There are only 113 that have been spotted in the United States, and they estimate about 24 in Mexico.
We need to let those genes flow.
Yeah, let them flow. Also, a border wall would limit these animals' access
or boil
to water sources. It would especially limit them in an era of warming climate. These animals like to roam. Jaguars like to roam. Wolves, lobos like to roam. Even the monarch butterfly is not invincible to the roaming consequences of a border wall, where they're getting zapped and along these electrical lines and along these light fixtures that are mounted on the border wall itself. So 1,350 miles are unfenced. A lot of that is along one of the 10 longest rivers in the United States. Any guesses?
St. Regis.
No.
The Nile.
No.
St. Regis?
The Nile.
The Rio Grande. The Rio Grande was that answer.
The Rio Grande. That's Spanish for the Grand, if I'm correct.
Yes. So the Rio Grande or Rio Grande River spans most of the border, especially along the border of Texas and Mexico. Trump is hoping to build 700 to 900 miles, which will cost $21 to $40 billion, but he has a solution. It used to be Mexico was going to pay for this border wall, but he has a new solution, and that solution is the United States military will pay for the border wall now. So if you're a fan of the U.S. military or have family members in the military, fundings will be cut to the U.S. military to build this unnecessary border wall, which will have devastating consequences to wildlife. And I saw the devastation firsthand when I arrived in Campo, California, which is the southern terminus of the Pacific Crest Trail, where the border currently has a wall. There are many, many miles of wall that either are forming vehicle barriers or pedestrian barriers along the U.S.-Mexico border. The wall already exists in most places. Trump is trying to build 700 to 900 more miles, but it's unnecessary. So if you'd like to do something about it, and you can, you should follow Wildlife Defenders at Defenders on Twitter or at Wild Ways Trekker, John Davis, who walked along this wall during his 5,000-mile journey to promote wildlife corridors across North America. So follow at Defenders, at Wild Ways Trekker, and fill out some petitions and let your voice be heard. Okay, we're going to cut to break. When we come back, we're going to do a deep dive into the devastating consequences when you fail to plan ahead and prepare for your next journey.
I don't know, I'm on the spot. I'm not good at this.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Footstuff Podcast, where we're going to talk about trip planning. Well, it's important to plan for your trip, whether you're going to Lincoln Pond or on a wagon train across the country or on any trip into the backcountry. A few things that you should always consider: check the weather. Make sure you have enough food, water, and equipment. Look up those 10 essential items to bring with you. You want to make sure you have an itinerary appropriate for the ability levels of those in your group. You certainly want to make sure you set yourself a few alternatives and leave that itinerary with people who like you back home so that they can call the appropriate authorities should you not come back by your return time. Make sure that you look up sunrise and sunsets so that you know when you'll have light on your journey. Look up the hazards of the region. Are there avalanches? Are there bears? Things to prepare for. But you really need to look up the rules and regulations. And Wade, the Eastern High Peaks Wilderness Area has rules and regulations that people should honestly look up before coming to visit here, don't they?
Yes.
What are they?
Yes.
Name one of them that you know.
Let's go around in a circle.
Yes, and then whoever can't name one has to drink. So first one, day use group maximum size is 15 or less.
Yes. Amanda, what's another High Peaks regulation?
You must bring a bear canister from April 1st to November 30th.
Hell yes.
Yes.
Dr. Science, do you know any regulation at all that you would advise our listeners to abide by when they're adventuring in New York's High Peaks Wilderness area?
Do not bring fish into the back country. Bears like fish.
Oh, that's right. That's true.
Yeah, they do.
Matt Baird, you got one?
No campfires in the eastern high peaks.
That's right.
Anywhere.
Jeremy, do you have any that come to mind?
No camping above 4,000 feet.
Yeah, and only at designated sites above 3,500. And if you choose to do a pristine camp, you want to make sure you're about 150 feet away from a stream, water body, or trail. So those are a few things to look up, but things can go wrong. I mean, when you fail to properly plan ahead and prepare, this happened to me. Personally, this happened to me when I tried to do the 740-mile Northern Forest Canoe Trail.
I remember when you failed that.
Yes.
Yes. We were all very afraid for your life.
Yeah. I remember actually all of us told you not to do it at some point before you left.
We were all actually concerned.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this is a canoe through paddle, if you will, that goes
canoe through paddle
from my hometown of Old Forge, New York, and it goes through the Adirondacks.
Wait, it starts at the water park, right? Do you start on the water slide?
Kilimanjaro, you
yeah.
The water slide.
Yeah. Wade and I went there, scored some drugs.
At the lakefront. The lakefront's cool. It's where all the cool kids hang out in Old Forge when you're in high school. One of my friends would store his bike underwater at the dock. He just would throw it in the lake and then he would go get it.
That's not... Would there get like chain grease in
oh,
the
yeah,
lake?
Seaweed. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But it was no one would steal it.
Yeah, it's called rust.
It. You'd leave it down there. He would always go get it.
Barnacles starting to latch on, and you just eat them as a quick, fun snack. Barnacles.
Well, you paddle from Old Forge through the Fulton Chain, through the Adirondacks, cross Lake Champlain into Vermont, up the Missisquoi River into Quebec. So you're in Canada. Don't forget your passport. You come back in through Lake Memphremagog, where you should get ice cream, in Newport, what? Vermont, in the kingdom, the Northeast Kingdom. You then go into New Hampshire and end in Maine, where you end at Fort Kent. You'll probably have to rent a U-Haul to get back to wherever you want to go at the end of all that journey. Well, last year...
Tyler, what was it like crossing the border into Canada?
I didn't make it, Wade. I didn't make it. I had my passport.
Did you make it to the water hole?
I did make it past the water hole in Snaky Lake. Excellent. In Saranac Lake, New York. The most dangerous part of my journey... Well, there were two. One... The lakes were all still frozen because I left in April and it was colder than I would hope I hoped it would be, and I was in a time crunch with my time off from work, but I went anyway, and I had to drag my kayak across the ice on the Fulton Chain. Racket Lake was totally frozen over, and I made it to the Saranac River, which goes for about 64 miles to Lake Champlain. Good God, good gourd. Because it...
Dear gourd.
All of the snow melt was causing the river to rise, and I went through some...
delicious wave trains.
Yeah, wave trains. I now know what class 2 rapids are. Class 2 rapids are when you say expletives and worry for your life in the spring snow melt. Yep.
You are not a whitewater kayaker.
No. No. No.
Not even a little bit, actually.
Yeah. Nope. I went through the trail rapids where the guidebooks warned me that there would be a chasm. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to run class 2 rapids at some point. So I went through the series of rapids, and I was like, where the heck is that chasm? And then I heard this thunderous roar. The waves were cresting at 4 feet high.
Jesus.
Yes, and so I stuck near the canyon wall, the chasm, and made it through and immediately dragged my canoe out of there and said, or kayak out of there, and said, that's it for now. And then I put it back in the stream and kept going. And at there's this big wave when you get into Plattsburgh, Platts Vegas, at Broad Street, the Broad Street wave, they call it. I almost capsized. And had to hole up in the night in Platts Vegas and let everything dry out. And then after making across Lake Champlain, I had to quit. So I learned that First off, you should be a pretty good kayaker or canoeer if you're going to go.
Did you actually paddle across
this canoe journey?
Lake Champlain?
I made it to Vermont, and then I touched a branch on the shoreline of Vermont, and I said, that's as far as I'm going to go. I made it to Vermont.
Did you see
about 20% of the journey.
That's still pretty incredible, though.
Yeah.
Did you see Champy?
Champy almost ate me. I swear. The waves on Lake Champlain are pretty terrifying. But I was humbled. I was humbled because nature holds all the aces, and you have to pay it deference that it deserves, because I really could have capsized and gotten really cold, or things could have gone south really quickly.
Yeah.
Instead, I just kept going east, but that's beside the point. I made it to Vermont, and I said, that's it. And I hung up the towel, and once that dried, I put all the other of my
also
gear away.
Boo.
Yeah.
Well,
it that towel?
No.
No towel.
That's the studio towel.
You shouldn't go kayaking or canoeing unless you're really good at whitewater, if you're going down the Saranac River in the springtime when the water's high.
Well, also, you should be pretty aware of local conditions.
Yes.
Which ties into the story that I have to tell, which comes to us from about 10 years ago, I think. Back when I was in...
Point on the Segway board, Wade Bash.
Oh, yeah, he does get one. Man, I think he's winning.
So where'd you go, Wade?
So this was a canoeing trip we set up with the scout troop that I was in back in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, the mushroom capital of the world. And
will you stop fucking saying that?
It's also the mustard capital.
Yeah, yeah,
of the
did
world.
You say the mustard capital?
So we had this canoe trip planned for a couple months, and we had all the canoes rented, all the paddles, PFDs, and everything. About a week beforehand, we got a whole bunch of rain. So the Brandywine, the river we were going to go on, was flooded a whole bunch. Two kayakers.
Yeah, I think Frodo crossed that.
Yeah, the Brandywine, whoever. Isn't that where they jumped onto the raft?
Yeah. You're talking
sure
about the Lord of the Rings, Wade. This is a story that J.R.R. Tolkien wrote.
How much of that pipe weed have been smoking? The long bottom leaf.
No, it's I think it's jazz lettuce is what it's called.
Jazz cabbage.
Jazz cabbage, yeah.
No, I think it's jazz lettuce.
All right, so after you ate all the jazz lettuce, Wade, where'd you go?
So it was on the Brandywine. About a week before the trip happened, we got a whole bunch of rain that came through, and the river flooded. So some kayakers went on the river.
Some rain wraiths.
So the ring wraiths in kayaks
went
down the river.
Wraiths, Wade.
And there's this little dam that usually you portage around. The water was flooding straight over it. So the kayakers went over the dam, got caught in hydraulics, most likely, and went missing.
Oh, okay.
Their kayaks were found. Their bodies never were.
Oh. Whoa.
So a week passes. The water levels die down. We're getting ready for our trip. We're getting the canoes out. We're at where we're going to put in, at where there's actually an old kind of abandoned family amusement park that's kind of creepy but still pretty cool on
when
the Brandywine.
When you say kind of abandoned.
It's abandoned for all but 2 weeks out of the year. all the rides sit there year long.
What goes on for those 2 weeks?
Maintenance, apparently. I don't know.
I've never seen this place open, but the rides are there year round. I guess I'll just say
this
that.
This is the weirdest story I've ever heard.
So
wait, that's Hershey Park, and that's where they make the chocolate.
Yeah.
I thought that's what you called your bathroom.
All right, Wade. So you were in Hershey Park.
Telling a story.
He was in the bathroom.
The chocolate river, if we will.
So
no, it's probably gonna be gross, man.
So 1 week after two kayakers have gone missing
river. Serious. I forgot. Sorry.
We're unloading canoes and the PFDs and stuff at where we're going to put in, getting ready for this trip. Park ranger comes out. I'm 16 at the time. Most of the kids in the troop are 12 or 13, a couple adult leaders. Park ranger pulls up, gets out of his truck, and starts yelling, literally top of his lungs. What are you doing thinking you're going to go down this river? Do you want these kids to see a dead fucking body? And we're
hell yes.
Oh, shit. everyone is frozen. Some of the adult leaders, pull him to the side and calm him down.
And
like,
said, stand by me, officer.
That, you get a point on the board.
That's not a segue.
Stand by me?
But that's not a fucking segue.
About a dead body.
We're not gonna start, but we're not gonna start talking about the fucking movie. That's not a segue.
It's not a segue.
I run the fucking board.
So then River Phoenix shows up.
Really?
so we talked to the park ranger.
Hey, you know that they were in Children of God.
Children of God. Yes, yeah, anyways, I do know that. We're talking to the park ranger, the adult leaders, and like the leadership in the troop. And eventually, like, even though everyone is like ready to go on this trip, eventually he talks us out of doing it because there is a very high chance that, because like along our route we were going along that dam, so there's a very high chance that the people might still be along the sure. route. So eventually we just pack up and leave, and the kids in the troop are like asking us what's going on and if it's about the body that the guy was yelling about, and we're like, no, like it's something else, like the canoe sprung a leak or something, like get the canoes hadn't hit the water, we were just making shit up trying to get them out of there. That day people going down the river found those bodies.
Whoa.
Right. Okay. Along where we would have been.
That's, so you should call local land managers, ask about hazards of the region. That would probably be mentioned.
Yeah.
And you could change your itinerary and go somewhere where there aren't those things.
Dead bodies, yeah. Lying in the water. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's my trip that went horribly awry. Well, could have gone worse.
Jeremy has a road trip that wasn't planned too thoroughly.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. So this is a long, long time ago too, and
you can still remember though, right?
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, I was thinking about taking like a little weekend type trip with my girlfriend. I think we're gonna stay like two or three nights, and we were trying to think of somewhere to go, and I had this great idea to take her to this place from my childhood. And it's the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore,
mm-hmm.
I think is the official title. But my I used to go there when I was a kid every summer, and I loved like swimming in Lake Michigan and playing on the dunes. So,
quick fun fact, that's on my itinerary for this road trip.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm going to be driving right by it.
Totally don't go to the one that's called Warren Dunes.
Warren Dunes.
That's the big one.
Sweet.
It's fucking huge.
And don't miss the Temple of Doom while you're on the first Indiana Dunes and then the Temple of Doom.
Yes!
don't go to Mount Baldy. So my girlfriend and I decided that we were gonna fuck off and go to this place. And this is a lot way back in the day before I ever thought about planning any trips at all. I literally just put like a couple of changes of clothes in a trash bag and put it in the trunk of my car and like grabbed my camera gear, and we took off, and we had to wait for me to get off of work, so we left a little bit later in the day, and it was like a 4 or 5 hour drive, and obviously I made no hotel reservations because in my mind this place is like not that big of a tourist attraction. I know that there's like hotels and motels everywhere. Like we should be able to find a place easily. So we finally get there, and I've been working all day, and we left from Cincinnati. She drove from Pittsburgh to Cincinnati to my house and then got back in the car, and we drove all the way up to Lake Michigan. So she's had a really long day, and every single fucking hotel is booked. I mean, like from the Holiday Inn to the Black Hawk Motel, everything is booked solid. And we finally come across this one that, like, there's only one car in the parking lot, and there's visibly vegetation growing out of it. It has no lights. And I'm like, okay, well, like, well, you know, we'll just stop. You know, it can't be that bad. And we go in, and there's, like, some ancient Tales from the Crypt-looking person working there. And I'm and this person legitimately was surprised that I was inquiring about a room. And I got the room, and it was like $30 or something. And it was still an actual key with the little plastic keychain on it. Like it wasn't like this, you know, yeah. Like they give you at a hotel now with the swipe card.
Yeah.
So we go into this room, which is about the size of a fucking walk-in closet. There's a television that looks like it weighs about 80 pounds. there's a bed that still has the little slot where you put the quarter in.
Oh, and it shakes.
Unfortunately, the vibration part was broken, but it did take quarters from you.
So it's working in like 50% capacity.
Yeah. The bathroom was actually really nice. It was very clean. I remember like the water pressure was really good. The shower was nice.
Yeah.
And I spent most of the night lying awake, staring at the door, because there were definitely drug deals going on in the parking lot in the rooms next to us.
On the Appalachian Trail, I stayed in a hotel that is eerily reminiscent of that in Parisburg, Virginia.
Oh, Parisburg.
There were bed bugs in that motel.
Yeah, this place, it was not cool. Like the bed itself had like dust on it because nobody ever stays there. I mean, had I like planned this trip out even just a day ahead of time and made a reservation. The next day, we got up and had breakfast, and we went to the beach and played on the dunes, and it was great. And we were actually able to stay in a really cool hotel that was very cheap. It was like a historic kind of place. And I remember being at that hotel the next day, and it had a back door that opened up to the woods. And I had the doors open, like just laying in there, like just hanging out, relaxing, and
a Sam Squanch.
Better. Two cats and three raccoons wandered into my room. And they were all on the same team, just trying to get food, so I fed them. And greatest trip ever after staying at the meth hotel. It was great.
Oh, God. Wow.
And campsites in the Adirondacks do book early, so you've got to really call ahead because campsites fill up too in the backcountry.
Yeah.
So you've got to really plan ahead.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I have a similar story to Jeremy, but I did not think about hotels on my road trip out to California. Got to Colorado, was looking for a campsite. There were none anywhere. At all. They were all booked up. And so we ended up staying in the shadiest campground I've ever been to, ever. There was zero service there. This woman just came out of her house, like, plastered, yelling at her husband, and, like, took the money from us, and then went to feed all her chickens and pigs that were just, like, around.
Hell yes. It came with a petting zoo.
Yes.
It like randomly hailed for 5 minutes. I was like, where am I?
That's awesome.
So you should plan for sure because, yeah.
Yeah, even on any, like it doesn't even have to be a wilderness trip. Like I'm planning a trip right now with my girlfriend going to the East Coast and stuff and have already booked places to stay.
Smart.
Like, just, yeah.
Do it.
Do your due diligence.
Matthew Bear.
Yes. I have a couple of stories, both from the Eastern High Peaks region. The first one was my second ever hike up here in the Adirondacks. It was during my college orientation trip. I signed up for the advanced hiking trip because I was like, I've hiked before. I don't have to do the beginner one. And we are going to go up Mount Marcy. And so I packed some snacks and I packed some water and I think a light rain jacket I think I threw in my bag and I was wearing just like my regular hiking clothes. And we started at, I think by the time we got there and actually started hiking, it was like 9 a.m.
9 a.m. and it must be late.
Yeah, it was pretty late. 9 a.m.
I love Hootie and the Blowfish.
It's not Hootie. I do love Hootie, though.
So do I, actually.
And we headed in, and this was when the old Marcy Dam was still there, because we have a picture where we're all lined up along the dam, which was pretty awesome. We hiked up and hung out with one of the summit stewards on Mount Marcy. We had lunch, having an awesome time, and we were all still feeling real good. And we were like, oh, well, we should do another peak. I mean, we're up here. We're all feeling good. And we're like, oh, that one's real close over there. It was Skylight.
Ooh.
So we descended the backside of Marcy. Pretty
insane.
Steep. Yeah, pretty steep. And we got to Four Corners, and I think we filtered some water there. And then we hiked up to Skylight. And we were hanging out there for a while, and the trip leader made like a call back to Paul Smith's, like, oh, yeah, well, we decided to go to Skylight also, but we'll be heading back now. Like, we'll hear from you soon. And then we had the map out, and someone said, I don't want to go all the way back up Marcy. That was so steep.
No, let's go to destination 5.
Yes. Let's go a different way. And then someone was like, "Oh, well, if we go this way, we can get another peak and get out and not go over Marcy." And this was before I learned how to read contour lines. So down into Panther Gorge we went. And
oh, gosh.
And then up and over Haystack.
That was longer. That was longer. A lot more work.
It was so long.
Yeah, a lot of
work. We were literally getting to the summit
of Haystack. That's way worse than just going back over Marcy.
Yes,
we were getting to the summit of Haystack as the sun was setting. And this is in the summer. Like, this was late. And that, it was at this point that we had a little group meeting and figured out that 3 of the 12 of us had flashlights.
And were you one of those three?
I was not one of those three. I did not have a flashlight.
Wilderness trip
or a headlamp.
Leader Matt Bear.
And we, this was where like the group also split up a lot too.
Yeah,
and
you've got
like
to ostracize the people who don't
big
bring
group,
the right
like a big
headlamps.
Group just ran ahead, started heading down. My friend Drake, he went ahead of me, and I was like hiking along, and I think there were 2 people behind me. I was hiking along by myself at this point, and I was in that stretch right in between Little Haystack and the Phelps Junction.
Yeah.
And I thought I was gonna pass out at one point. I like stopped and I was like, I'm bonking hard. Like, I have zero energy. I like sat down, and if I had been last, I would have fallen asleep, or I would not have gotten up. Like, they came up around the corner, and it was dark at this point, and I was just like, you guys have any food? And they were like, they did not know I was there. It scared the shit out of them. It was great. And then we continued down, and we were walking down the trail, and we see this red headlamp, like, running up the trail towards us. It was my friend Drake, and he had accidentally taken a left at Indian Falls and started hiking down that way. And he had gotten lost, like, didn't know where he was, and he couldn't figure out how to turn the red light on his headlamp to the actual light, so he couldn't see anything either. And apparently, he recorded like a video to like his family and everything, like thinking it was like he was done for. I've never seen this video, and I would love
come
to
come on, Drake, send us the video.
But anyway, he met up with us, and we hiked
he's
our way.
He's a pretty famous artist in Toronto now. He sings.
Yeah,
he's a singer.
Yeah. We hiked our way down, and we got back to the parking lot at, I think, 2 a.m.
Right.
Yeah, and that was about 23, 24 miles altogether. Yeah.
When it's that long.
That's a long
It was a long
day.
Bear.
That is a lot of elevation, too. That is the first, third, and fourth highest peaks in the Adirondacks.
Yep. And my third, fourth, and fifth high peaks that I ever did.
Oh, my gosh.
First two, Cascade and Porter?
No, Esther Whiteface.
Ah, ooh, all right.
What was your first, Wade?
First was Porter. Second was Cascade.
Your first was Porter?
Yeah.
Hey, me too.
Hey, cool.
No wonder you guys hug naked. Just a couple shout-outs. New friends of the pod, Dylan and Haley. We met them at the Bella's Bar Talk concert this past week in Upper J.
Yes, we
that
did.
Ruled.
Yeah.
Shout-out to Dylan and Haley. Thanks for listening. Dr. Science, you have created a masterpiece.
Oh, well, thank you. That's awesome. I did a little short film. I shot it around the Adirondack Park. I did the music for it. And, it's if you haven't gotten enough winter in the Adirondacks and you're still aching for more, check it out.
Yeah.
We'll post a little link in the bio of the Instagram
sure
account.
Sure, we will.
So, yeah, we'll share it on the Facebook. And
also,
stuff like that too,
if
yeah.
you are unaware, it is Dr. Science who created the delicious intro, outro, commercial music for Footstuff Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what I really want to be known for.
No, it's but the experiments of Dr. Crow that we'll get back to. And also, yeah, the baboons, that's got to get on that.
Yeah,
baboons.
Please. Also, baboons. Shout out to friend of the pod Bear, who is on the Pacific Crest Trail right now.
Oh, yeah.
The Mojave
he
Desert.
Messaged me on Facebook. How is he hiking the Pacific Crest Trail? It's a sham.
If you want to look him up on Facebook, his name is Eric Hoppenemi, and Hoppenemi is spelled exactly how it sounds.
And he will message you back because he's not actually hiking.
In studio this week, we're lucky to have friend of the pod, Amanda Colley. Amanda, you want to shout out to the friends back home?
Sure. I'd like to give a shout out to Wrench Kid.
Yeah!
The fuck is Wrench Kid?
Wrench Kid, congratulations on hiking 100 miles in one day.
Yeah. The old the century day.
The century day. You're amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Thanks.
Good job, Wrench Kid.
Thank you, Amanda. Anyone else want to shout out to anybody?
No.
Nope.
Tiger Bastion, who is now a fan.
Oh,
right,
yes. I want to shout pod. I want to shout out to that owl.
That owl.
Let's just shout out Linda.
Yeah.
Hi, Linda.
Linda sends the best emails. Those emails are... Where are they?
The best emails.
Flooding in.
She used
no
to
taffy.
Send the best taffy.
All right, everybody. Well, that didn't sound good. All right, everybody. Good night, America. Keep it wild.
I don't know if I can make a dubstep sound. That thing is fucking rad. How much was that?
Dear Lord. Oh, goddammit.